Hey friends, look, I'm about to do something which makes me feel a bit queasy deep down, but my husband slash producer assures me that this is what every podcaster does. So here we go. Grab onto your handbags and let's get this shit done. It has been wonderful seeing our audience grow over the last few months, and I would really love the chance to find out a bit more about you. Who's listening? What would you like to hear more of? And who would you love us to have on the show? So you can find me on social media. I'm Scorthorn Gab on Twitter and at GJoska on Instagram. So just shoot me a message and tell me what you're into. And while you're at it, tell all your friends. That's right. If you've just listened to this podcast, get on your social media and say, hey, I just listened to this great podcast. No, it actually really does help the show out. So if you could give that a little tinkle, that'd be great. Or you can subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. Getting a bit excited thinking about hearing from you. Hello, I'm Gabrielle Scorthorn, and this is Back From Reality. When I was 17 years old, my dad smuggled me out of a school excursion so that I could line up for hours at my local Westfield to audition for the reality television show Fresh Meat, where I would be competing to be a presenter on Channel V, which sounds pretty legit. But when you're plucked from suburban obscurity and thrust into the public eye in a world of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and you're not even legal, shit goes down. What happened over the next few months shaped the rest of my life in ways that I'm still discovering today. In this series of podcasts, I will be speaking with a different guest each week from the world of reality television. These chats will cover the highs and lows of the reality TV experience, how their lives have changed as a result, and what it's like to come back from reality. My guests today are Carla Hart and Daniela Borg. Carla is the creator, executive producer, and director of Family Rules on NITV. Daniela is one of the show's stars. The series follows the lives of the Rule Clan, an Indigenous family based in Perth. Daniela has raised her nine daughters, now aged 12 to 30, on her own since her partner Kevin tragically died in 2004. If you haven't watched this show yet, drop whatever you're doing after you've listened to the podcast, log on to SBS On Demand and binge all three seasons immediately, just like I did. You will laugh, you will cry, and you will fall in love with Daniela, the Rule Girls, and this warm-hearted, relatable show. Because at the end of the day, can any of us put up our hands and say we've never emotionally guilted our sister into some French tips? Carla, now I understand that originally you were working on a documentary just with Angela for Angela's Rules. And it was while you were working on that documentary that you got to meet the family. And that's when the idea of the show was kind of born. You thought, this family needs to be on TV. What was it about the Rule family that just screamed a show to you?
Well, I'm a big fan of reality television and I'm not afraid to say it. I do watch a lot of genres, but, you know, trashy reality, it's got the connotation of trashy television, but I like it as a switch off. I find it entertaining. And also, I am a big fan of the Kardashians because I've been watching it since I was younger. And for me, when I spent time around the family, I really saw the dynamic of all of the sisters. I mean, where the hell do you find a family with nine sisters, for starters? Like, nine sisters, no brothers, all aged from tween up to around the 30 mark. And they're all, you know, a chip off the old block with Daniela. They're very confident within their own rights. They're very vulnerable, emotional. They're very caring and loving. They fight like hell, like any sisters do. And they have a lot of fun. And I just found it so much fun to be around them. So just watching them, I was watching them through the eyes, I guess, as a filmmaker of a viewer. And for me, you know, the success of the Kardashians is the returnable element and the fact that the sisters, we like to watch sisters. I have four sisters myself, and I've grown up with a lot of women around my family, and I just knew that they were made for television because of that, because, you know, it's not the trashy connotations, it's the elements there that, you know, you're covering a whole range of things from very young girls who are going through certain things in their lives to 2, 3 years older, 4 years older, 5 years older, And like every step of the way, like there's high school, there's university, there's jobs, there's starting new families, there's everything going on at once. And then you have the mum who's balancing all of that. So, I mean, it was a no-brainer, really, to be honest.
And the mum is you, Daniela.
The hot mama.
The hot mama, indeed. How did Carla first raise this idea with you? What were your first impressions of being on a television show?
Well, actually, the first time I actually heard it was when we went to do a viewing of Angela Rules. And so we got to see Carla's short documentary of my oldest daughter, Angela Rules. And I remember her standing up in front of the crowd and pretty much saying exactly what she just said. She said it. She put it out there. And, yeah, you know, when you put things out there, the universe comes back to you and that makes it happen.
So you just whacked it out there.
Yes, totally.
It did happen like that. So she put it out there and said, oh, I'd love to do a series on, can't remember your exact words, but it was somewhere along those lines of this family, because the dynamics and everything why Carla, what Carla just said. And I laughed because I didn't take it seriously. I was like, yeah, like, you know, you wouldn't. And then a few, I don't know, sometime later, Carla approached us all and shared her vision, if you like. And we're still like in, not denial, but like, oh, really? So then we sat down as a family and spoke about the reasons for and letting the girls make the decisions themselves. And yeah, so we made the decision as a family to do series one for various reasons. So personally, I thought it was a great opportunity. I suppose if you want to create change in the world, you can immerse yourself into someone's life through this kind of medium. And then through that, I'm giving them a sense of seeing how we are and developing, I don't know, just seeing, getting emotional. And by the emotions start changing the behaviours and the way that people look at Aboriginal people as such. So yeah, there was quite a lot of reasons for doing it. But, yeah, it was just something that I wanted to do my part to try and create a change in attitudes and stereotypes out there.
You mentioned that you as a family looked at the pros and cons list. Carla, did you brief the family fully on some of the impacts that could happen to their lives after exposing themselves in a show like this?
Yeah. Once they had their family talk, I remember we met at Dome in Midland, and we had to get a conference room because there were so many sisters and some kids. We had very open dialogue about the pros and cons, and I made it very clear that I didn't want to expose them and that I cared about them, and that, as Danielle is saying, for me, being an Aboriginal woman, well, technically I'm a Gorang Noongar woman with links to Wilman and Minang, so I have my own countries within Western Australia, that I have my own language groups. And that was one of the reasons that I really shared with the family, was that we have an opportunity to show our people and our women and our culture in a way that hasn't been seen before, because we've done it for 3 seasons now and no other family have been followed in this way like we have done. NITV have not done a recurring series like this before. So, you know, I think it was about trust, them knowing that I had their backs, and even, you know, down to the edits. We actually showed them their episodes before they aired, and if there was something that they didn't like, we would either argue the point as to why it was strong for the story, or we go, you know what, we actually don't need that to tell the story. So we'll take it out, because, you know, at the end of the day, to create film like that, that's intimate, you have to have a trusting relationship. And, you know, in doing that, and I wanted to continue the series, it wouldn't benefit me to be doing things to exploit them or for followers or audience reasons. It's more about the story that's being told. So I think in the end it came back to trust, and also we all saw the wider picture of, you know, what we could create historically with this series.
And Daniela, you were saying, you know, when you sat down in your family conference, what was the boundary there of, like, did everyone have to be on board to go ahead with it, or was it a majority? Were there certain members of the family who were more hesitant about doing it? What was that dynamic like?
Oh, I think it was more of a collective decision. So everybody in the first series definitely was involved. And like Carla said, the whole series is based on relationships. So having the writers come to us and start planning what's going to happen took a lot of trust. So it was about the individual, what they were prepared to share as well. So it, you know, like each individual had their part in how they or what they wanted to be put out there. So it was all about trusting the crew, Carla, and going with it. But certainly at the series one, everybody or nobody.
And you were just saying that there's planning and storyboarding kind of involved. And Carla, I know that you've used the term deep access documentary before, and because this is definitely an ethical kind of recurring reality television show. The kind of basis of a documentary is, you know, not interfering with subject, but you, I mean, the sheer logistics of having 10 kind of main subjects, you've got to storyboard and plan. What's that balance like for you?
Well, you need a balance because, first of all, you have to stick to budget when it comes to shooting. I mean, even just miking up everybody. You know, we miked up kids as well because it was part of like everyday life. So, but when there was an event and we had to mic up everybody, including Nan who might have came along, you know what I mean? Like it's a full-scale production. So we have to storyboard for budget. And also the broadcaster is not going to give you a whole heap of money and go just shoot some shit and we'll hope that it's good. Like basically we would choose, okay, who do we think? Like I'll go and do research. Obviously I worked in partnership with my partner, Renee Kennedy, who runs Metamorphlix. But I would go out and spend time with the family and have a yarn with them, call them, go meet up and say, okay, what's going on with your life next year? What are the major things happening with you? So like, for example, we had Alicia's ball, you know, we had Jess was starting uni, Daniela was starting like about to turn 50. We had Shana who had a you know, healthy mind, kind of wanted to feel healthy and better about herself in the third series. And it took us 2 series to get to that. Because in the first series, she wanted to do it. And then she was like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to put myself out there like that. That's really like hard, like self-consciously. And then the second series, she was like, yep, let's do this. And then like she freaked out again and was like not in that space where she thought, oh, I feel good about that. And the third series, she decided to do it. But even then we had lots of back and forth conversations because of the topic, because it is their real life, you know, and they are putting themselves out there. So the planning and writing we did was based on what we knew about the family. So, you know, you come to know them so well, and also, you know, life, like I am a mother, you know, I have sisters, I've got a big family. So you can come to predict, okay, something might happen in this, like where you kind of feel a bit of a lack of, you know, motivation to start doing this when they're going through this or like uni or whatever it may be. So we'll write it based around the key elements and predict what we think the inciting sort of incident or a turning point may be based on life events and being there to film in those particular blocks. And also to also have in the planning enough time to just sit in the house and just film or film family outings. You know, sometimes I suggested things based on what I know about the family members, like, hey, what do you think about going to do this? Because I know that they, you know, are interested in that kind of thing and I know it would make for good television, but then once they're there, that's their experience. So yeah, like most of the time, our episodes were exactly what we'd written, surprisingly, but we did have some changes in the works. Like for example, Kyra's episode had to be completely changed around because she got pregnant and didn't tell us. So by the time like we were doing interviews and trying to adjust like her boobs, like adjust like tape on her boobs because her boobs were spilling out of her bra and stuff and like what the heck is going on here? And you don't want to assume that someone's just getting fat or something. And then by the time we got told, like I literally had already been told by one of the sisters that I let on to nobody because like I wouldn't want anyone to know in the family, you know what I mean, that sister's told me. So we had to literally change around the whole episode. So some of the interviews that she did early on that we used in the episode, we can actually see like how the hell did we not know she was pregnant in these interviews? But we had to change the whole episode and that was like really, really hard because it is their life, you know. So We do write to an extent, but it's not scripted.
Yeah, there's planning, but then there's also life, and you're not going to get in the way of that. And I guess like having that intense kind of planning as well, it also allows the family to feel comfortable in we know what's coming up, and you've discussed that with them. So, you know, you're a bit more comfortable going, yeah, well, I said I'd like to share that. So, you know, we're okay. But then there's planning, and then there's a crew that rocks up to your house, Daniela, and starts filming you. What was that like when you were first greeted with cameras coming into your home, getting mic'd up? What was that experience for you?
Well, like I said, our first experience was with Angela Rules in terms of that. So we kind of had an idea that the cameras come in, they set up, and all that. So I think from series one to series three, we became accustomed to the cameras, if you like. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but, you know, it was about the trust of the people behind the cameras and behind the audio. You know, they became immersed in our lives, if you like. So they were always there. So sometimes they'll catch us, you know, when we don't really want them to catch us. Because they're always there. So you become accustomed to it. I suppose the crew made it easy in the sense that it was just done culturally sensitive. You know, obviously they didn't follow us in the shower and they knew that, you know, things like that. So they were very respectful in that sense that, you know, there were times when we needed our privacy and that was okay and they respected that. So, yeah, it was something we grew accustomed to by series three, yeah.
And because especially, you know, that final episode in season one, you know, there's so many emotions happening and it was such a big event, life event for you. You are putting the gravestone on your husband's grave. Was that the first time that you were having to experience that kind of confrontation in front of a camera? And how did they maintain that sensitivity for you in that kind of moment?
I think in terms of the sensitivity, I think out of memory they gave us space. So the way that they filmed it was quite respectful. They did what they needed to do and then the cameras went off because it was like we were spent more time than what is obviously is on the camera, if you like, and that wasn't put out there. So I suppose it was just balancing what they thought was respectful in terms of what to put out there. It's an important message, though, I feel, that when people go through something that can be life-changing, they have to find some healing in that and not be ashamed of it. And I think it's an important message to get out there that, you know, we all go through this journey, but it's the healing when we come across adversity or whatever that means the most in these kind of experiences in our lives, and not to be afraid of it and just go through that process of getting there, if you like. So it was emotional, but I think that something like that is very emotional. So
yeah, it's funny you should mention that particular scene, because that was really hard for me as a director and producer. You know, throughout the series, we always are aware that when they're doing certain things, because we're scheduling around life events, they're doing those things for the first time. So you don't want to film so much that you've taken their joy or their experience out of it. You want to film enough to get the story and then leave them to have their own raw emotions about things and not take away from them just because you want to shoot it. And, you know, as a Noongar woman myself, I grew up with that sense of like you are not meant to be at cemeteries after 4 o'clock out of respect, and that's like the old ways, you know, and a lot of people still are like that. But I mean, things change with culture and young people as well. And we were running really late that day, and I had said I didn't really feel comfortable shooting it. And there was another producer at the time that was working on the series, and I think part of the crew felt like we needed to get it, even though we were going to be there for a couple of days. And I sort of went, okay, well, maybe it's all right. But then when I came up to where we were filming the scene, I literally felt so sick. I was like, no, I don't want to do this. And I walked off and I told the cameraman and the sound guy, and I said, no, like, we need to stop. And we ended up stopping, and I felt really like inside of me, my culture and my spiritual connection had crossed over, and I really felt like I needed to trust my own spirit and know that that shouldn't have been done at that time. And I needed to explain to the non-Indigenous crew people that if your spirit is telling you that it's wrong you're not never going to get what you want to get because, you know, our culture is entwined with anything that we do and we have to be mindful and respectful. And myself as a producer, as a director, I can't just break those rules for film. And then Daniela and I had a conversation later that night because some of the girls felt some things too. And like we understood that as Noongar women, we had felt a certain way for a reason and that we should never feel like we have to do something. And that's on both sides, like the family side and myself as a Noongar woman with strong cultural beliefs. And in the end, you know, like we got everything we needed to tell that story. So we really didn't have a need to be like running around trying to do things late at night at symmetry. So that was the right thing to do, I think. But it really taught me something as a woman and as a filmmaker. I think my confidence wasn't as good as it is now because that's the first series that I've ever done as well. And on that scale, huge scale. So I kind of got thrown into doing my job, you know, learning because I'd actually never produced before this series, series one. Like I was shooting and directing. So I learned to shoot and I shoot on the series, on all three series I've shot with another shooter director. And I write and I produce as well. But that was the first time I was a producer and I must have felt pressured that I had to tell the story, but then I realised, no, I can't do this. And that was a really big learning curve for me as a director, as a producer, as a Noongar woman, to never compromise myself and to know my strength and to really make sure that I stay true to who I am because it's never necessary. I mean, we have cultural rules and spirituality for a reason. It keeps our spirits well and it keeps us feeling good in our hearts. And if you don't feel good, then you shouldn't be doing it.
Daniela was saying that one of the most important reasons of why she returns to do the show is that cultural sensitivity, is that, you know, you're working together and you as a director and producer completely understand the cultural limitations of like, well, no, we can't film now because that's not right. But you were saying that you're working with Indigenous and non-Indigenous crew members. So what is that process of making sure that everyone's on the same page? You know, are you constantly having to educate non-Indigenous crew members on the boundaries of filming as well? Like, and how does that work?
Well, there was one non-Indigenous producer. It was Jill Moody, she's amazing, mind you, but she's not Noongar. She's from a different Indigenous clan group in Sydney, but the rest were non-Indigenous. And culturally in Australia, we are very diverse. Like they might say Aboriginal people, but we have like over 200 languages here in Australia. We have heaps of different language groups. Like my language group, well, Daniela and I, our language group is not the same as Jill's, for example, on the other side of the country. Our cultural and our spiritual beliefs are different. While many things might be very similar, many things are very different as well. So, yeah, with crew, I really feel like over the course of the years, we've used most of the same crew. And these are people that are just beautiful people that really came to understand and know that we carry a lot of cultural loads. We have one of the highest suicide rates in the world. We have, you know, some of the most incarcerated people in the world. Like we're still trying to close the gap on education, on health, on housing, on so many things that other people take for granted. I really felt like the crew, you know, they became pretty much our allies. Like even now, like you see them, they're at festivals or commenting on our stuff on Facebook or standing up for things because they've spent time around our mob where they may normally have not. And they learn from that, I guess, from those experiences. And I couldn't speak more highly of the crew. I mean, that was one of the only situations that kind of happened. You know, throughout all the series, they've asked for direction on things. I think we just felt under pressure because we'd traveled a long way to get to Norseman and then we were running late and then we knew we had to hit certain points for that story. And like everybody was sort of tired and under pressure and felt like didn't understand things. And it happened in a rushed way, so and that's why it ended up stopping in a rushed way as well. And it kind of was like a little train that was moving. But in all other regards, I couldn't speak more highly of the crew.
And, you know, you were saying that when, especially in that episode, Daniela, the camera stopped, but then you're still left with this real life situation. Has the show opened up things inside of you that you weren't expecting?
I suppose it was an opportunity to grow within yourself. Because when you look back at yourself and at your life the way that we can, it's so different from just looking at photos or homemade videos, you know, completely, completely so different, because you've got the story behind the video, if you like. I look back at series one and I think, gosh, I've actually grown. So what the series has done is helped me in terms of self-reflection as well. But I suppose with some of the elements of series one in terms of episode six, it was, like I said, it was more healing. I always try to look at things in a positive light. I wouldn't have done it if I would have thought anything negative was going to come out of it. So it was always about trusting the producers to be able to tell our story in a culturally sensitive way, and then also trusting them that if they know that we are not coping, we know they're going to stop. And like Carla explained, and that's something that happened. And then they allow that time for us in that instant to be able to go through it. I'm always trying to communicate with my girls and reflect on that. So if I feel that something is as a result of what we filmed, then I will talk to Carla about it. So that's the way we rolled all the way from series one to series three. And we share our, you know, our Indigenous background, our Noongar background, so we know each other in that sense. So overall, it was a way of me self-reflecting. And you know, sometimes I look back at myself and I think, gosh, you know, you see it as a positive, like, oh, you know, I should have done that better. Why wasn't I more stricter in that scene? Gosh. And then I'll say to one of my daughters, gosh, these were little shits. But that's life, I suppose, in terms of things that came out of it in a negative way. I try not to look at it in that sense.
Just with that, we work with an ethical state film body, which is Screen West. So there are guidelines that you must adhere to when filming Indigenous content, and that is like always having a cultural consultant when you're filming, you know, anything that may have impact on community. So even though that I work intensely in my community with language and culture, and I'm a consultant for other people culturally, we still had a cultural consultant on the project. And when we shot in other areas, like Norseman, for example, we got a cultural consultant from the family up there to have a look at it. When we shot from series three up in Warrakoona, some of the women came together and watched that episode to make sure that it was okay for their community, for everybody to see.
I also wanted to touch on, Daniela, you said, like a true mama, you're constantly checking in with the girls. Have you ever had to kind of, have you seen something been filmed with your daughters and you've gone, that's not going on television? Have you ever had to step in and kind of go, I don't feel comfortable with that?
Like I said, there was a hidden communication that we Indigenous people have with each other. And so sometimes Zucala may have seen something that I may have seen, but I can't think of anything out of my head.
There were times when Daniela would say, Carla, check that. But I always had her back in that regard because I don't want to put her out there like that. And we weren't out there to tell stories to have sensational headlines about things. It was more about their own journeys as women and women together, and also their identity and, you know, what they were going through. But certainly some of the episodes when we got to Rough Cut, I was thinking, oh, my God, I don't think Alicia's going to like this, or I don't think Shana's going to like this. And then you show them and they don't even, like, say anything, but it might be something else that's really little that, like, they're worried about that's so easy to get rid of. Maybe it's a shot or something where they think their butt looks big, or and you're like, nah, sorry, I can't remove it for that reason. Like, but I thought they might have been sensitive about, like, a, like there was a fight that we filmed, you know, where I think Daniela, it was after Jess's, when you were doing your uni assignment, and like we had two cameras, and like the camera with the really good lens, the nighttime lens, I was using, and then I gave my lens to Claire, who went off to shoot Jess at her netball final, and I stayed, and then all of a sudden Alicia and Kyra had this big fight and we had no lights, and the sound guy ran outside with me because I didn't have good lens on the camera, but I went outside and he runs outside with a lamp, and it was a bit intense, and then it got really intense, and then we were like, okay. And she was trying to put her assignment in. And then so in the end, I said, let's put everything down, turn everything off. We've got enough to tell this story. I said, okay, Daniela, do you need help with your assignment? And our runner at the time said, I'll help. And I said, and I'll take Alicia to go to Hungry Jack's. And we stopped filming and, like, pitched in with the family to help get shit done because there was a huge fight that we filmed. We didn't have to keep filming it and probably heighten the situation. We were like, what can we do to help? Because we actually care about this family and you know what I mean? Like, in the end, you get enough to tell the story. You don't have to milk the shit out of it. I could tell Daniela was under so much stress and sometimes having the cameras heightens the stress, you know, I'm sure. So we just put it down. I went to the shop with Alicia and got Hungry Jack's. I think it was Bonnie got, like, sat down with you, Daniela, and was like, anything I can do to help with the assignment? And, yeah, that was that.
Yeah, because it was crazy because it was a 40-page research assignment. It was quite intense. You know, I had a very intense semester. So by that night, I was just like, oh, be stuffed. If they're going to kill each other outside, let them kill each other. I need to put this assignment in.
I feel like as a mother of nine, your life is constantly intense. I just feel like you are so equipped for intensity. So season one comes out. What was the reaction, you know, from the public? What was the family's reaction to watching yourself back? What was that?
Well, it was quite an exciting time for all of us, I think, because we worked so hard in terms of getting that first series out. And, you know, we're filming, we're still working, we're still doing everything that we need to do in our normal lives. So nothing stops. It's just kind of like filming as well through it, you know. So it can be quite intense throughout that. So we were all very excited for the first series, knowing that we worked really, really hard for that. And also we wanted to, like, we knew it was good. We knew that it was good. But we didn't know how, well, I didn't know how the public would respond to it and if they thought it was good.
They had a billboard in Sydney, which was pretty freaking epic. And they did a Vogue shoot.
I've
the whole
seen
family
it.
Was flown from Western Australia to Sydney for Vogue. And Alicia got to wear a pair of shoes that was worn by Rihanna. So she was like, oh, my God. I was like, oh, my God. And four-page spread, like, you know, they just happened to be drop-dead gorgeous as well, all of them. Chip off the old mother's block here. And their dad's gorgeous too. Rest in peace, I should say, as well. But, yes, he, you know, good-looking man too. But, yeah, like, they all got flown over there to do this Vogue shoot, so that was quite epic. And, you know, the community had never seen anything like it. It was great to see our mob on television, our women, also to see, like, a series that portrays how we have a foot in our cultural world and also a foot in the modern world, and we're trying to get on and do the best that we can. I mean, Daniela's mum lived on reserves on the outskirts of town, as did my mum. And, you know, here they are, homeowners and having masters at university and stuff like that. Like, we have moved, you know, we all always hear, oh, black fellas, you know, they're stuck in the past and they can't get along or move forward nor this, but we have moved incredibly fast. And, you know, this series is a testament of, like, the resilience of our older people who have done it hard for us to move forward. And I really think, you know, like, it was great for our mob to see this positive representation of who we are on screen instead of negative stereotypes, which we constantly see. But, like, I know that the girls have been recognised out in the community. People often say to me, oh, my God, like, you work on with the rules and, oh, they're so gorgeous. And Shana and Alicia tell me that they get free drinks sometimes when they go out because people just they know who they are. Yeah, I was like, yeah, milk it. And, some, you know, when we go to obviously community events and stuff, I've seen people walk up to the girls and just be so, like, want a photo with them and want to meet them. And I know with my nieces, I had to go pick something up or drop something off at Daniela's one day, and I had a couple of my nieces in the car, and they were like, oh, my God, this is the street where the rules live. Oh, can we come and meet them? And, like just for our little girls to have those women on television that, you know, you don't have to be Kathy Freeman, like Jessica Mowboy, like famous, these famous black women who are singers and runners and in the sports and all that. You can be an everyday girl going to school and respecting your mama, loving your mama, even though they have their little fights and stuff.
Most times.
But like, you know, that you can be happy and doing your own stuff as well and be successful and happy. And I think that's, you know, in a world with technology where we're always putting our best face forward with our best selfies and our best life on Facebook and everybody sort of comparing it to each other and looking at it when they might be a bit down and thinking someone else has got a great life, it's nice to see the light and shade of those worlds.
Yeah, I think that's what I got out of it. I mean, a lot of, when I say Noongar people, I mean Aboriginal people from the southwest of WA, but even Aboriginal people from the other side of Australia. I mean, I think their feedback to me is like, good on you, sister, you know, you're putting our mob out there, you know, because there's too many stereotypical things on the news and in the media that portrays Aboriginal people less than what they are, you know, in a negative light. And so when our mob are on TV, you know, just like going to work and going to school, other Aboriginal people are really, really happy to have that out there because it's a positive for our mob, you know, and that's what we want to share with, you know, with everyone. And like Carla said, we're not all glammed up in some of them. I mean, some of the scenes I look horrendous, you know. I just thought, if I'm gonna give it, I'm gonna give it my all. We don't put makeup on in the morning, you know. I look like Dag in the morning, you know what I mean? I don't wake up with makeup on, I don't do any of that, you know. So why should I pretend to be something I'm not? But it was nice to be glammed up in the Vogue and things like that and experience that.
And some of the girls were like, would see it and be like, oh my God, no, I can't watch this because I look so ugly. Look at my hair. What the hell am I wearing? And then I'm like, you know what? It's fine because look at this other scene where you glammed up and got this dress on. Your makeup is bomb. Your hair's bomb. Everybody in the world getting to see you bomb. Like, don't worry about that. They're not even going to worry about that. The titles are going to be on the front of every show where you're going to look gorgeous. So a lot of counselling was happening as well.
They sound like incredible positives. And on this show, something that I'm constantly kind of getting fed back as one of the most difficult elements after the show has aired is trolling and public backlash in that way. And when you're trying to protect your daughters, have you A, had to experience any of the more negative side of that, and B, how do you deal with it?
Well, there's a few elements to the trolls. Some of it is just plain ignorance, and then some of it's just plain jealousy. I don't know what word to use, you know, like why would you want to go on there and speak really nasty about someone when they're just doing something that they want to do? Like, I don't understand that, especially on a computer. I do recall in the first series, you'd get the negativity from obviously people that don't understand our culture. And then people assume that I had 9 kids off different fathers. People assume that I wasn't working, you know, and all this kind of stuff that they just didn't understand. So they were quick to say negative things without realizing our story. And then I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to respond to it because I feel that it's not worthy of a response. So I never responded to that because I don't have anything to prove. I know who I am. I know where I'm going. And at the end of the day, whatever a troll says doesn't really affect me. I just told my girls not to read into a lot of stuff as well. Yeah, so that was the first season. The second season and third season, I very rarely read anything, to be honest with you.
Yeah, just saying that, like before the first series aired, myself and Renee about like trolling, you know, after the series comes out, and we wanted to be able to protect the family and have a talk to them about what people would potentially say and trolls as well, to prepare them because Daniela has some really young girls as well. And, you know, no matter how strong we think we are, every now and again we'll read something that'll hit us either at the wrong time or straight in the heart when we're feeling sensitive, and it'll make us cry. And I know that some things that were written did affect the girls and hurt them, but they, you know, had strong enough support system with their mum, with us, I think, as well. We went out and had a meeting with the family and talked to them about, you know, the things that people could potentially say and comment about and stuff like that. We even had some CCTV put at the front of Daniela's house so they can feel safe because we did film on the street and stuff like that. You know, we talked a lot about that. And I think, like I'm saying, like you can talk about it as much as you want you know that that's going to happen. And yes, it is, like, especially there's with our people, lateral violence is another thing as well that we have to deal with. And that's something else that adds to that pile of stuff that you're dealing with people who want to be negative and be mean. So it certainly did affect some of the girls, but they didn't dwell on that too much. In the end, we always talk to each other about there's like 98% love and there might be 2% of assholes, excuse my language, but the 98% of love make you feel way more better. And they're not just love, like, I love you guys. Like, they're real deep messages of thank you for sharing your family with us and sharing these beautiful stories. They relate to them. They can see themselves in them. They can see their culture and they're proud. So those statements more than account for any negativity, you know, wasting time on any negativity.
And that love kind of then transfers into, I mean, multiple season renewals now. But what a fun segue to get to talk about series two. Going into series two, Daniela, one of your daughters no longer wanted to take part in the show, is that right? Was that a difficult decision to come to, and what was the decision-making behind that?
Well, I think, like I said, no one is forced to do something that they don't want to do. And so it was a multiple decision because you have to commit to filming. So if you're not going to be available, you're going to let the whole team down. So it was more about the commitment.
And these guys are so close-knit that because we didn't have one of the sisters potentially for the second, it caused like emotional stuff because, you know, they all want to do things together. So that was like crunch time for all of us because we weren't sure if we were going to do a second series really because of that, because they all love and care about each other so much. And they also are all very passionate within their own minds about what they want to do as well. So yeah, we almost didn't do the second series, but a lot of deep respect went into that decision from the whole family because they love each other so much.
Yeah, it wasn't an overnight. It was, like Carla said, it was a process of where we're going to go with it. Okay, are we going to continue? Yeah. But in saying that, she participated in the promoting, shooting, photography and that was really enjoyable.
So we had an amazing shoot with all Indigenous designers for the new title shoot and the new promotional shots for the series. So we made sure and invited her and her daughter along, or her family actually, to come along and jump in the photos as well, so they can all have their keepsakes with the whole family. And, you know, like, so it wasn't just a photo that was missing one daughter. So Daniela could put that photo up of all of them styled and beautiful and have that occasion to remember. So we do care in that way. And I think that's the best way to be.
Carla, does your job get a bit trickier going into a second season when the family are now a bit more clued into what the final edit looks like? You know, are the girls kind of concerned, don't get my butt shot, don't, you know, like they're a bit more clued into how filming is going to work? Did that play a part in anything?
I think they're aware, but still, like, if they're tired, they're not going to get up extra early to put makeup on. Like, you know, they're sleeping in still. We've rocked up and no one's up and they're rushing around because they'd rather get their extra hour's sleep than worry about putting a face on before the cameras roll up. And also, and that's a great thing. That's why this family was so great to film, because they really didn't change much. And when you spend so much time, like we shot for like 80 something days just about every season, there we're just constantly around and you never know what we're going to use for a half hour episode. So they're more doling up to look good for themselves and for the gram and for when they're going out and stuff than us. You know, they were already doling up. They were already little style icons themselves. Like, so I don't think that made a difference. And also because there was always so much going on at Daniela's, someone would have a problem, and this is the super mum Daniela coming in, and then maybe three or four sisters might want Daniela's attention at the same time, and Daniela will decide. She will decide which daughter needs her attention first, and then the other daughter who might have a problem might think, oh, I actually need you right now, mum. So, like, their everyday life situations, when you know a family where you got a big family, it's like a swinging door. Everyone's always coming in. If it's not grannies, it's your son with his friends, like in my instance, or like Daniela, it's her daughters and their friends, or it's family, and it's like lots of people coming and lots of things happening all the time, and everyone's on schedule. So more concerned about their actual life and what's going on than the cameras, which is the beauty of the show, I guess.
I think that's how why people relate to it so much. It doesn't matter what cultural background you're in. The fact that it's about a mother balancing her parenting, you know, when she's got multiple children, about, well, who am I going to attend to first? You haven't got a father as such to, you know, to palm them off, so you've got to do it all yourself. So, yeah, so it's about managing, okay, well, who sounds urgent? And then the other one will say, oh, you only worry about her, but at that particular time, she's needing me more in that moment, and then I attend to the next, you know.
And I think, Carla, like what you do with the show as well, there is a huge relatability to it because, yeah, there is, it's exactly what you say, Danielle. There's that element of like, yep, it's family life, a mum balancing kids. There's also, like we've been talking about, there's a huge cultural element to this show. And like the moment that really pings out at me is that, it's like, hilarious, but when Alicia's getting ready for her ball and, you know, she's putting her makeup on, and I think like one of the sisters says, like, why are you putting that much on? And it's like, it's too white for your face. Why are you putting that on? And I'm laughing. I'm sitting there laughing, watching these sisters kind of, you know, joke about their makeup. But then the other side of that conversation is, oh, yeah, there's a huge problem in the beauty industry with diversity. You know, it's like there are these tiny moments throughout the whole show that is balancing politics and relatability at once. I mean, Carla, is that your intention? And like, and how do you do that balance? Are you looking for those moments? How do you do it?
Oh, always, you know, and I guess naturally we encounter those moments on a daily basis. We're carrying cultural loads, racial stereotypes, you know, intergenerational trauma, racism, black deaths in custody. We're carrying all these things, and that is our everyday life. So, yeah, I mean, certainly we are looking for the things that make us who we are and make us as resilient as we are. But, you know, equally looking for those little beautiful moments with, like, you know, like Jess, for example. I call her my sweet Jess because she's the sweetest kid. Like, literally what you see is what you get. And she's just so sweet. And there's just some beautiful moments where she really is concerned about what Daniela thinks. And like, I work with a lot of kids because I do a lot of work in schools and, you know, with culture and stuff like that. And some young girls, like they don't care what their mum thinks, and they're not afraid to tell her or if it's going to upset her or whatnot. So we're looking for those unique moments to show and share that are really beautiful and soft, you know, as opposed to looking for the drama. You know, we're looking for those really special human moments, you know. Shanika in the third series, when we took the boys in for the first time, we filmed them coming in to see their sister for the first time. We're looking to share those incredible, beautiful moments, those moments of life, a window into someone's world that we can all relate to. So it's not just about our culture and our people, which come naturally, but it's about those really beautiful moments. The stress of wondering if you're going to get your assignment in on time amongst juggling a family and daughters who are fighting on the night that you, like, decided to cram it in the last minute. Like, you know,
I've learned from that.
You know, with Shana, like, challenging herself to feel better about herself and actually realizing, yeah, you know, like, what you eat does make you feel better. Like, it's not about weight loss. It's about actually feeling good. Those little things that you want people to see and watch and relate to, universal things of moments in our lives that we can all relate to as people, I think those are the beautiful things for me.
I second that. I think embracing our similarities as humans, as parents, as mothers, as daughters is a special thing, you know, and being able for us to share our story, to be a vehicle for that.
And, you know, like, even holding the camera at that moment, like when we went in with Shanika, I was holding the camera watching the boys come in. I was crying. With the baby, I was crying. Like, I was so happy, like, knowing Shanika for the time I have, you know, her first girl, seeing the boys come in, and, like, Dane trying to give her the car, and Trent, like, it was just one of the most beautiful things. And, you know, like, with Shanika and Trent, like, with the episode, that was the first full episode we had on Shanika, and her family and showcasing their beautiful family, Shanika and her husband Trent, seeing a black brother in that light, loving and really hands-on as a father. And our men in our communities and families, they love their kids, you know. They're so soft and yet they're portrayed in other ways. And to be able to see that, that's just incredible. And mind you, there's been plenty of times where I've been also holding the camera, crying, laughing and trying to hold it still because it's hilarious because I know the girls so well and I'm just like, what? Especially when they make their little snide comments to each other in the eyes and only you can see it, so you're dead laughing. So, yeah, it's an emotional roller coaster filming it as well.
Yeah. Listening to both of you today, I mean, you really do sound like family. Just there's so much trust in each other, and that's probably what works with the series. Carla, you've always said that you wanted this show to be made with integrity and ethics, and the family is always in the forefront of your mind. But you also said earlier in the interview that you love reality television, even the trashy stuff. I think what this show does is it shows people that there is a way forward for ethical reality television. What would your advice be to producers in terms of how they could treat their contestants a bit more ethically?
I think it depends what your intention is and also what platform you're going through to get funding for your series. I guess, you know, that would just totally depend on where it's going, I truly believe, because as we know, we tune into certain channels and whatnot for certain content. I would like to see a lot more deep access documentary reality style series because you get to see real people and I feel like it's historic. It gives you a moment in time in history and of how, say, Hannah, a 13-year-old girl, was in 2000 and whatever, how, you know, a woman turning 50 in 2019, heading to a community the first time, having cultural differences there with Aboriginal people, but having kind of a bit of culture shock there as well because it's very, very different, and experiencing that and showing that to white Australia that, yeah, we too, you know, can go up and have experiences with our own people that we've never had before. So, yeah, I just think it's about what your intention is. Like, you know, obviously there's all different variety of these shows made for reasons to shock people, to, you know, get those kind of audiences. I guess it depends who your audiences are and what kind of support you have in terms of what kind of story your broadcaster wants. A series like this, if you wanted to make a series like this, you have to know the family, know what their boundaries are, be able and open to talk to them about those boundaries if you think it's an important story to tell and for an audience to hear and to be able to have that conversation. And you have to protect them, you know, and then they will give you the best of themselves. They'll give you their hearts to share.
And that concludes my interview with Carla and Daniela. One question I keep asking myself across the making of this podcast is, can you make reality television that is ethical and responsible? Is the whole thing kind of predicated on humiliation? Well, I truly believe that Family Rules is a show that steers a new path. This is the kind of television we need more of. So how about it, Channel 7? A bit more care, a bit more kindness, and a lot less of the honey badger punching a woman in the fucking face. For the second time. This podcast was produced by Hugo Chiarella for Unlikely Productions. The dulcet melody that you are listening to right now was crafted by Robert Tripolino. If you reckon this podcast is a bit of all right, please tell your mates, post about the podcast and leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find the show. Come on, get a girl out there. You can also follow me at Gjoska on Instagram. Yeah, I know, that's Gjoska. Not my best, not my worst. You could also follow me, Scorthorn Gab, on Twitter. It's my name, but backwards. Hey, we should do this again sometime.